Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie. Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, Irish owned and Irish made for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Good morning and welcome to the programme. Today, financial planner Owen McGee on the response to his advice that some landlords in rent pressure zones should leave their properties empty. Local election results spell trouble for the British Prime Minister. Rishi Sunak will get the latest as the tallies emerge. Flooding has ravaged parts of Kenya and we'll hear from reporter Amy Nirida, who has witnessed the devastation at first hand. RTE's Derek Mooney on the Joy of the Dawn chorus. We're going to look ahead to the bank holiday weather with Alan O'Reilly a little bit later on. Chef Brian McDermott brings us his next hero ingredient, and today we're all here for the cheese and the gathering on that diplomatic row with Britain and the challenge of asylum seeker accommodation and plenty more too. You can text us this morning 51551. You can also email the programme todaycb@rte.ie. And it's to asylum seeker accommodation we turn first, because a large number of men were turned away from the International Protection Accommodation Services office on Mount Street in Dublin yesterday after they gathered there hoping to secure a place to sleep for the night. Instead, they were given letters telling them that there would be no further offers of accommodation at this time. Olivia Hayden is volunteering there and she's on the line now. Good morning again, Olivia, and thank you for joining us, because we spoke to you a couple of days ago. Can you tell us, though, what's been happening on Mount Street yesterday and since there was that operation to clear the tents?
Good morning, Claire, and thanks so much for highlighting this issue again. Yeah, so yesterday there was quite a number of people, maybe around 100, who gathered hoping that they'd be offered accommodation. And it did seem like that could be the case early in the morning. But as the hours went on, people started to lose hope. But still, the staff hadn't told them, you know, you should leave, this isn't happening today. So they kept thinking that it might, until they were eventually handed letters saying no more accommodation, offers are going to be made today, and basically we're told to leave the area but weren't told where they should go. So most people went to homeless services, which has been great, but then there was a big question, where were they going to sleep that night?
Okay, and they managed to get tents, at least some of them did they?
Yes, so places like the Lighthouse and Captain Centre and also Crosscare give tents and sleeping bags, so people were able to get them, because a lot of these guys were sleeping at the IPO. So all of their stuff has been destroyed. It just didn't happen to be there when that operation was happening. Some people were at the mosque. Some people were sleeping on a couch for one night, but normally sleep at the IPO, or managed to get enough money together to be at a hostel for a couple of nights. Mm-hmm. So all their things are gone, except some small personal belongings. So they have to go get new tents, get new sleeping bags, and then find a safe place to sleep for the night.
And where did you hear they went to?
So they're scattered throughout the city. Like, there are hundreds of people who are sleeping rough, and it wasn't only at the IPO that we would have people sleeping. So all around throughout the inner city, especially on the north side, you would have people sleeping. One man told me that he slept two nights ago on Moore Street on his own. He slept only a couple of hours in a doorway without a sleeping bag, fearful that if he did fall asleep, something would happen to him. He didn't know where to go. He was on his own. So last night, some of the people who weren't offered accommodation did decide to group together and went to a park that was owned by the church. And the priest allowed them to stay there, despite the anger of the local residents, who were a lot more scary than the unvetted men that they were claiming.
Some residents welcomed them, and I did read that in comments this morning. So we need to be careful not to paint everybody with the same brush, Olivia.
No, definitely. And as someone of that neighbourhood, there was a lot of other people there welcoming them as well, and it wasn't a long-term solution at all. Mm-hmm. So this morning they've had to leave that area.
Yeah,
there's other people sleeping on beaches, and we don't know where people are going to
sleep
tonight.
This obviously makes it harder for you and people like you to help these men, because I know for the last couple of months you've been able to go down to the IPASS office and help people out there. Because the group now has spread out around the city, it's more difficult for you, I'm sure, to provide assistance.
Definitely. We don't know where everyone is. We know of a few different locations, but it does make it a lot more challenging for the volunteers to get to these guys, to make sure that they have access to the services that they need, that they're safe, and that they're healthy, because that's one of the biggest impacts of being on the streets for weeks, if not months, is the impact on your health. A lot of people have chest infections, and then the impact on the mental health as well is massive.
Mm-hmm. And we know that barriers were being erected on Mount Street, so you've seen what they look like. Is it impossible now to put up a tent there?
Yes. They're taller than 6 foot, and they come out enough that you wouldn't have enough space on the pavement to safely put a tent. You can only walk mostly in single file, and that's all around the International Protection Office and the surrounding streets, anywhere that a tent had been or could possibly go in the area. I was talking to one man who normally would sleep in a different part of the city because he felt safer there because he's closer to people from his own country. And he said, you know, I've been homeless for 3 months, but I didn't sleep here at the International Protection Office, so I didn't get offered accommodation. So now should I come and pitch a tent here? And I said, where are you going to put the tent? There's nowhere to do it safely. And he was like, I don't know, but I don't know what else to do.
All right, Olivia, thank you very much. Once again, that's Olivia Hayden, who's a volunteer. Well, all the political commentary across the Irish Sea will, of course, be about the local elections in England and Wales and how badly the Tories have done. That's the story that's emerging in the last number of hours. But despite that, today's Daily Telegraph is still leading on this diplomatic row between Ireland and the UK over migrants, reporting that the British Prime Minister is to offer Ireland a chance to join the Rwanda scheme. Well, that's been dismissed by Dublin as Tory spin. Well, I'm joined on the line now by Gerard Howland, public affairs consultant and former government advisor. Good morning, Gerard.
Good morning, Claire.
So we've seen this swing to the Tories now, first evidenced in the Blackpool South by-election, and as the local election results come through, I see one commentator saying in the last few minutes that this is as bad as it possibly could be for the Tories. This offer then for us to join the Rwanda policy, are they the actions of a beleaguered British Prime Minister fighting for his survival, or does it have any validity?
I think it's very much the latter, and I think we have to be very careful in Ireland not to overestimate our place in the scheme of things. This is electoral politics in Britain. It's about the Tories' fight for survival. If you read the text of the Telegraph articles closely, but also look at them in conjunction with other articles in the same day, in the same newspaper, you can see they're part of an electoral grid, essentially, that's been spun out of Downing Street around a range of issues, including the BBC, the British Civil Service, Mayor Khan in London, and I could go on. So we are one of a smorgasbord of issues and ingredients that's been used to stave off the electoral disaster. In relation to the Blackpool by-election, the biggest figure for me is not that Labour swept the boards. It is that the Reform Party, which ultimately the Tory party is most afraid of, got precisely 0.6 of 1% less than the Tories themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So Labour can and may well send the Tory party back to its electoral heartland. But the danger of Reform for the Tories is that it can eat it alive in those very heartlands.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what this is about. And to see ourselves as central to this in London, in Britain, we are not central. We are peripheral.
Okay, well,
but we are collateral damage.
That's as may be. But if we listen to what Olivia was telling us there earlier on about the situation on Mount Street, people still arriving, seeking asylum, there's nowhere to put them. I mean, there's a possibility that that offer from the British might resonate with the Irish public.
It might, but I can tell you is that we have made a fundamental strategic decision as a country in the context of Brexit and before, which is that we are part of the European Union, and that in terms of negotiating these issues ultimately, they are between the European Union and Britain. And this is not, by the way, about Britain regaining control over migration. This is an example of the final ultimate loss of control of Britain over migration. And in relation to migration, on the one hand, we are in the European Union, but also uniquely in the European Union, we are part of the common travel area. And let us look at Britain's interests first, because ultimately it will be motivated by those interests. It is in the imperative interest of Britain, and it will realise this sooner rather than later, but perhaps sooner is after the next British election, that the cooperation between Britain and Ireland to manage the common travel area lawfully, well, successfully, is in the absolute imperative interest of both states. And a failure to do so ultimately unleashes chaos, not just here, but in Britain.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an unthinkable scenario. It is very clearly understood in those parts of the British system that are still capable of thinking clearly. This is not, for example, coming from the British Home Office. It is coming from political spin in Downing Street and from the Tory party. And I think we're in for a very difficult few months. And I can't readily understand how things might get better. And I understand, on the one hand, it's being driven by electoral politics in Britain, but concurrently, our own electoral timelines are tightening here. We have local and European elections 5 weeks from today. And we may well have an election in the autumn, if not shortly thereafter.
So you foresee this diplomatic row intensifying over the next few months, informed not by common sense, but by this battle between the Tories and the Reform Party.
And Labour. And we have to understand, I mean, if you go back to Gareth Fitzgerald in the 1980s, if you look at Bertie Ahern in the lead into the Good Friday Agreement, the 10 years after the Good Friday Agreement, before we got a devolved administration up and running, if you look at Enda Kenny first and then Leo Varadkar during Brexit, the challenge of Ireland vis-a-vis Britain is to realise, firstly, we are seldom central to their thinking. And it is our job as a smaller country, abutting a much bigger one, is to stay calm and stay focused on what is strategically important to us. Mm-hmm. But Claire, I recognise that in the heightened atmosphere that is here now about immigration, that is genuinely going to be very difficult.
We had Bertie Ahern on the programme earlier this week, and he was so critical of James Cleverly's decision to cancel the meeting with Helen McEntee. And he even suggested that when the meeting is rescheduled, it should be planned for Kerry to make life a little bit trickier for him. You mentioned precedents, though, when the relationship was difficult in the past. Has that type of a snub, though, ever happened before in your experience?
Well, I remember Gareth Fitzgerald was ritually humiliated in public in the floor of the House of Commons by Margaret Thatcher. I think the Blair-Ahern relationship was unique in terms of British-Irish history. It wasn't replicated subsequently when both those men left the stage, and it's been more difficult ever since for Irish theatre, including, as I said, Enda Kenny and Leo Varadkar. And Simon Harris is not going to find it going easy at all.
Mm-hmm.
The Tory party is in a corner. It is besieged on the one hand by Labour, on the other hand by Reform. And all of this is pure politics.
All right, but more turbulence to come, says Gerard Howland.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much, Gerard, for joining us on the programme. Now, coming up next, housing and this controversial idea from financial advisor Owen McGee. Hear about it after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.